Blog Talk Radio.
I see some black people looking at me, man. It ain't us, it's the media. It ain't us, it's the media. The media has distorted our image to make us look bad. Why must you come down on us like that, brother? It ain't us, it's the media. Please cut the fucking dish, okay? Okay? When I go to the money machine tonight, all right? I ain't looking over my back for the media. I'm looking for niggas, bitch. Pat Cobble ain't never took this from me. Niggas have. So you think I got three guns in my house because the media outside? Oh, it's Mike Wallace. Run!
Television is a goddamn amusement park. Television is a circus, a carnival, a traveling troupe of acrobats, storytellers, dancers, singers, jugglers, sideshow freaks, lion tamers, and football players. We're in the boredom-killing business. So if you want the truth, go to God. Go to your gurus. Go to yourselves. Because that's the only place you're ever going to find any real truth. So turn off your television sets. Turn them off now. Turn them off right now. Turn them off and leave them off. Turn them off right in the middle of a sentence I'm speaking to you now. Turn them off.
Come on.
All the humanity and all the...
Mary had a little lamb, it was white as snow, and everywhere that Mary went, the lamb was sure to go.
Turn on, tune in, and drop out.
Yeah, I'm super cool. Ah! Ah!
Ah! I never once said, na-da-da.
I think everyone wants to know where we came from and how the universe began.
You know what I'm saying?
I have sinned against you.
And welcome to the show. It's the end of the week. It is Friday. That's right, Friday. Friday, 4:20.
Sounds like you're not very happy.
It's 4:20. Anyway.
Light 'em up.
Oh, 4:20. I don't even know what to say. It's been all over the place today.
Puff, puff, pass.
Yeah. Puff, puff, pass. It's been an interesting Friday. Because Friday is usually boring, folks, as far as news is concerned. But no, not today. Not today. It has not been a boring Friday. Today was a very, very interesting Friday. And thanks to George Zimmerman, because this is going to be the new trial of the century. It's going to be.
The O.J. Simpson.
This is exactly. It's O.J. Simpson 2.0. That's exactly what it is. It's Reese on the radio. It's 3 minutes after the hour. It is April 20th. It is 2012. Now, we wanted to get one of these young people from Paul Robeson High School on the phone, but he chickened out. Punk ass.
You don't know if he's chickened out or not. He's just not answering his phone.
He's not answering his phone. He knew we were going to call him, and he punked out.
It's Friday.
I don't care.
He's a teenager. He probably saw the pump up in his
ass. Well, he's a part of the student council over at Paul Robeson High School. He better not be puffing and passing. But we're not going to get into him because he didn't call, so we're done with him.
Yeah. Paul Robeson's puff-puff passing it right now.
No, you can't puff-puff and pass and still be a part of the student council.
Who said?
Because I said so.
You can.
Whatever.
You were just a prude in high school, I bet.
What? Yes, I was. Straight punk. That's right. Straight punk.
Never pulled a fire alarm?
No, I pulled a fire alarm? No, I didn't do any of that. But I have a song dedicated to George Zimmerman. This is the song I got for George Zimmerman today. Listen.
See, me and the boys, we don't like it. So we're getting up and going down.
That's right. Tonight there's going to be a jailbreak. George Zimmerman is getting out of jail. That's right. He is getting out of jail because he got bail at $150,000. He got a bail of $150,000. Killed the guy. Now look, you got to hear what it is that I'm saying here, okay? I'm not jealous or bitter at the Florida judge who did this. I'm not in any way bitter, okay? I had never, ever, ever been charged with a crime in any way whatsoever. I get charged with rape. Don't have a criminal record. They even check Interpol records to see if I got any convictions or any arrests across the globe. Never. They set my bond at $300,000. George Zimmerman has been arrested before, twice in fact. He shoots a kid. The kid dies. And this happens.
The good thing about practicing law in Florida as a judge, as a prosecutor, and a defense attorney is that we have lots of experience. I don't think there's too many other jurisdictions in the country that get the wealth of case. The amount of cases like this, not this particular one, but just cases in general in the criminal justice system. So we're all very experienced with this. This is a very common type of hearing, and we're all familiar with this type of hearing. It's a regular hearing, but for the media involved in this particular case. And the circumstances associated with Mr. Zimmerman's record are something that the court and anybody who practices here in the Central Florida area is familiar with the situations that goes on at those establishments on the UCF corridor is the way I'll describe it. I think that's the best way. And so we're familiar with those particular situations. It's, I won't say a standard, but it's a run-of-the-mill type run-in with the alcohol beverage agents there at the library, I believe it was. Is that correct? At the library. They're fairly common, so I'm familiar with those, even though it's in another jurisdiction. The injunction was somewhat mild compared to the injunctions that I'm familiar with. And so really, what this revolves about is the facts of this particular situation as presented to the court. What I'm going to do is I'm going to find that the motion is well taken. I'm going to grant the motion, set bond in the amount of $150,000 with the following conditions: electronic monitoring, GPS. I'm going to require the state and the defense to meet with the sheriff's department to accomplish it. That means that Mr. Zimmerman is not going to be released today, but I'm going to make sure that the state and defense can work out those assurances. And then if we need further hearing, again, to preserve the secrecy and to establish safety, as long as the state and defense can agree, that's fine with me, and the sheriff's department agrees, that's fine. If we can't, we can have another meeting with respect to that.
So we got $150,000 bail, but it gets better than that. It gets better than that in the state of Florida. Now, most people would hear that and go, wow. Still, $150,000, that's still a lot of money. George Zimmerman's family is only required to come up with 10% of that money.
$15,000.
George Zimmerman's family could just put up the house as collateral on that. That's all it is. So all they got to do is put up $15,000. And George Zimmerman is free to go. That's all. That's it. Now everybody is upset. They're angry. They can't believe that he actually got a bond. They offered, or they contested, the prosecutor for that matter, contested that the judge should make the bail, I mean the no bond, or at least make it $1 million. And he said he was going to grant it. But there's a reason why the judge did grant $150,000 bond. There is a reason why he did it. And I have to read this to you so that you hear it. This is a story from Breitbart News. The story goes a little something like this. With ABC News' release of the George Zimmerman photo showing blood flowing freely from his head, The question becomes whether Angela Corey, the prosecutor in the case, had access to the photo before charging George Zimmerman with second-degree murder. The arrest affidavit did not mention the photograph or the bleeding, gashes, and bruises on Zimmerman's head. And this is according to Professor Alan Dershowitz of Harvard Law. He stated upon the release of the affidavit that it was so thin that it won't make it past the judge on a second-degree murder charge. Everything in the affidavit is completely consistent with the defense of self-defense. After the release of the photo, however, Dershowitz went much further, telling Breitbart News that if the prosecutors did have the photo and didn't mention it in the affidavit, that would constitute a grave ethical violation, since affidavits are supposed to contain all relevant information. Dershowitz continued, an affidavit that willfully misstates undisputed evidence known to the prosecutors is not only unethical, but borders on perjury, because an affant swears to tell not only the truth, but the whole truth, and suppressing any important part of the whole truth is a lie. When asked if it made a difference whether or not the prosecution had the bloody photograph at the time they charged Zimmerman, Dershowitz responded, we do not know that there were earlier photographs before the affidavit was done that strongly suggested blood on the back of the head. And we know that the police had first access to him. So if there was blood, they, the prosecution, would know about it. I've had cases in Florida against prosecutors, Dershowitz said, and it's not the first time they have willfully omitted exculpatory evidence. It's a continuing problem here. It's not only immoral, but stupid. The whole country is watching. Why do they benefit from having half-truths in an affidavit? Dershowitz added, I'm not taking sides, but I'm insisting that both sides play by the rules. And as far as the prosecution, they're not playing by the rules. Another key point of all of this that baffled the crap out of me was that the lead investigator, the lead detective, took the stand today and was presented with the probable cause affidavit and was asked two very key questions that go right to Alan Dershowitz's point. The first question is this. Who used the word profile? Did you come up with that word? Who decided that he profiled? The lead investigator had no idea. And by the way, the affidavit is co-authored by the lead investigator. That's one. Two, when Mark O'Mara, George Zimmerman's lawyer, asked that lead detective on the stand, do you know who started the fight? The lead detective said, I don't know. This has been baffling all legal scholars today. They're all saying the same thing. I can't believe he said that. He is on the record as saying there is no evidence that supports a fight didn't happen or that George Zimmerman wasn't the victim of being struck by Trayvon Martin, the lead investigator. In fact, he says, a witness says that he saw two people run past his window. He doesn't say how soon they passed, how soon apart they passed, but then asked, is there any evidence that supports that George Zimmerman started a fight or didn't start a fight? He says no. In fact, he doesn't say no. He says, well, when are you talking about? He says now. Now, from the 50 days that we've had, from February 26th until today, do you have any evidence that disproves that George Zimmerman wasn't assaulted or that he did start a fight? Do you have any evidence to support anything on the level of who started the fight? The lead detective said no. No witnesses, no evidence, no nothing. And it's evident that everyone has seen the fact that George Zimmerman had bruises on the back of his head. Now the question is whether or not they can prove that George Zimmerman attacked him and then lost the fight and then shot him, or George Zimmerman's claim, he was confronted by Trayvon, punched in the nose, knocked to the ground, and then pummeled and then shot Trayvon. That's going to be the problem in the second-degree murder case. So let's bring in the Intrepid crew. 347-308-8701. Kool-Aid man James Montgomery is on the phone, and, of course, our producer, JC. So, where am I wrong, gentlemen?
I agree. That is going to be a problem. That will be a problem.
I don't.
However... how can the lead investigator know who started the fight when all he's got is Zimmerman's word to go on?
Ah, this is key to the whole case, JC, and I'll answer that briefly and we'll let James go. It's very simple. In order to prove that George Zimmerman profiled, that's the word they use in the affidavit, that means that he sought him out, looked to find him, confronted him, and then shot him maliciously. It's the core of their charge that he second degree murdered him in the second degree with malicious intent. That's the whole key to the second degree charge. So if you can't prove it, this is it's just like Casey Anthony. Yes, we know that Kaylee died, but we can't, the coroner could not determine how she died. When you ask the coroner, was she murdered? I can't determine. Is she dead? Yes, I can determine that. Can you determine how she died? I can't determine that. So you can't determine if she was murdered. You can't determine if she was murdered. So therefore, you have to throw out the claim that Casey Anthony murdered her if you can't tell that she was murdered. That's the reason why she got off. You're charging somebody with murder, but you can't prove that the child was murdered. Killed with malicious intent. So it throws it out. That's why she's found not guilty. It doesn't matter what it is that we believe they could have done. The coroner doesn't support that belief with fact. So this is where the prosecution has a problem with the detective. He cannot prove beyond a reasonable doubt that George Zimmerman maliciously killed Trayvon Martin because he can't even discern whether or not Trayvon started the fight or George Zimmerman did.
Okay,
and with that
case
is like, hello, can I answer now?
Yeah, go ahead.
Give me 1 second, James. Hold on one second. In cases like this, the jury is often given the option for a lesser charge.
No. I understand that.
Well, no. Well, that's not the case here. That's not the case here because I haven't heard that it's been murder two with the option of manslaughter. They said it's just murder two.
Right.
So I have to agree with him. However, Reese, there is something that you seem to forget.
Please tell me.
All right. The fact that when George Zimmerman got out of his car, he had said, this is in his own words, I don't want to say the word, but, well, no, you know what? Oh, shit, he's running.
Okay.
Now, here it is. This is the part where his story falls apart, okay? Because it wasn't that he was running towards George Zimmerman, because before that he said, oh, he's walking towards me, he's checking me out, he has his hands in his waist.
Right.
Okay? Then all of a sudden, Trayvon Martin takes off. This is the part you. This is the part that you call into question.
Right.
All right. He says, "Oh shit, he's running." He gets out of the car.
Right.
Now it isn't. Now, with that, you hear the chime of the door.
Right.
When he gets out of the car, you hear him breathing hard.
Right.
Okay. Which means that he was actually chasing after Trayvon Martin.
Undisputed, James. You are absolutely right. Go on.
Right. Okay. Then you hear the officer or
the dispatcher.
911 operator.
The dispatcher.
Right.
Thank you.
Yeah, yeah.
Thank you, Mary.
The dispatcher clearly discerns that he hears George Zimmerman somewhat out of breath, so the dispatcher discerns he must be
running after him.
Right, right. He can discern that. Everybody can from the audio.
Okay.
That's undisputed.
All right. That's undisputed. Okay?
Indisputed.
And again, indisputed. Excuse me. Indisputed. Then you hear the dispatcher tell him, "We don't need you to do that." He does say, "Okay."
Right.
He does stop. You can infer he does stop because he's no longer panting anymore.
Very good, James. You're on the ball so far.
This is the key
element of the game.
He does stop. He's trying to give street
a location.
Yeah, street location on where he's at. Again. But see, this is where the story falls apart.
Go on.
Because if he's running away, how did you all of a sudden get attacked? You don't run away only to turn around and come back.
This story doesn't hold water.
Hold on.
Wait. This is true. But now, James, this is where you're getting into murky water.
No, wait, because I'm not done yet. Because you said, all right, the story has been predicated on whether he was followed, all right? Now, I do understand where you're coming from, but again, if he's running away and you're chasing him, you're following him.
Right, there's no dispute there, James. But here's what I'm asking. We cannot get into the mind of Trayvon Martin and whether or not he did indeed then confront George Zimmerman. I know you're saying if he ran away, why would he then confront him? But
Come on, man. No, we can't get into the mind, but think about it, man. Yes, we can.
No. You're talking about logic. The point is that you're saying how could Trayvon logically confront George Zimmerman if indeed he ran away? And obviously,
not if indeed, okay, because it came out of George Zimmerman's mouth.
I didn't dispute
okay.
that, James.
Okay, but James, so we can't dispute the fact that Trayvon Martin did run, but we also, at the end of that phone call, George Zimmerman was supposed to be waiting for the police officers.
Right. Yep.
Where he was standing, I think, which was somewhere by the mailboxes, if I recollect correctly.
Right. And
James, let me finish.
Mm-hmm.
So, when the phone call ended, we don't know, we, not being there, don't know what happened at that point, whether George Zimmerman continued to pursue Trayvon, or whether Trayvon
confronted
George Zimmerman, like maybe he was, you know, he ran and then he doubled back. He saw that the guy was a littler guy than he was.
Right.
You know.
Wait.
Don't get upset that I'm
what's
saying.
What's more feasible?
No. Nothing to get upset about.
It's
nothing to get upset about
prove.
That.
It's
or
what
to
you
get
can
emotional
prove.
About.
And what is more feasible?
At
what
home.
Is more feasible?
James, you're talking about You're talking about what's feasible based upon a person that we don't know the character of, be it George Zimmerman or Trayvon Martin. We don't know their
character. I'm not even talking about character. What I'm talking about
is the facts
of the case.
Character plays a key role into what led to the two of them engaging.
When you talk about character, why is it that it's Trayvon's character that's the only one that's called into question?
George Zimmerman.
Not George Zimmerman's.
Wait a minute.
George Zimmerman's character is called into question here.
James, you're wrong here. Let me tell you why you're wrong here.
How am I wrong?
Let me tell you why. Okay, first of all, the only thing that we've done here, especially me, the one thing that I've done here, is that I've said, and as well as Mary, I apologize, but I'm speaking for myself. The one thing that I've done here is I've said that I have not made any speculation based upon what it is that we
think. Which is untrue, because you've made plenty of speculations.
No. I said I've made no speculation as to what did happen as opposed to what could have happened. My questions have always been based upon what could have happened.
Why is it evidence? All right. Why is it that when you speak about what could have happened, all right, it's only and has ever been
the defense of George Zimmerman?
George Zimmerman's motivations. Never Trayvon Martin's. Or if not, then Trayvon Martin's, and you said yourself, well, if he wasn't doing anything, why did he start running?
Right.
Okay, James, let me ask
you. You have already.
I had a quick point.
Let Mary go, then JC, you make your point. Go ahead, Mary.
Okay.
James, let me ask you a question, and this question is for you and really for anybody else out here that may be thinking in this way, and we know that there are several people out there.
Mm-hmm.
What makes you believe, if this was a white-on-white or a black-on-black crime, would you not have so many questions? Would you, you know what I mean? I really think that everybody is making a huge. Well, we all know
the answer is yes.
Deal. Okay, so you would be making all this noise if it was a black on black or a white on white crime.
White on white, yes. I'd still be asking the same questions.
Okay.
And that's one of the reasons, because I have said, and I've gone on record on this show, and said that. Although you can't really call him a racist, all right, a racist in that terminology, that's no longer the case when it comes to George Zimmerman. But this still is a case about race. It's about the
It's not about race, James. It's about. No, it's not. It's about two young men.
No. One young man.
Let me finish.
He's 28. He's a young guy. He's 28.
He's
28. How old was Trayvon?
Man, okay, James. It's about a teenager and a young man getting into a
teenager
situation.
And an adult.
Wait a minute. A teenager and a young man. He's still a young man, though. He's an adult, but he's still a young man. A teenager and a young man getting into a situation that became
How do you know that, though?
Listen to me. Can I finish? How do I know what? The teenager and a young man?
No. I'm sorry. You're right, and I keep saying that, so I'm going to let you finish. I'm sorry. I'm going to shut up now.
Thank you. A young man and a teenager got into a gravely unfortunate situation. We don't know what happened. We don't know if this was a race issue. We don't know that. No one knows that. No one is really going to know that but George Zimmerman and Trayvon Martin. And Trayvon Martin can't speak for himself. The only person that does have any word right now is George Zimmerman. And based off of previous, based off of his character that was noted in the newspapers and in the area where they live, or where he lives, that he has actually fought for other African-American people. And that he tutors. Now, nobody knows. None of these kids have come, you know, come to the forefront to say that, yes, they were tutored by him. But it does say, you know, that he was tutored. So we can't, so we can't excuse that. But he fought for this young, for this homeless African-American man that was assaulted by a white lieutenant's son. And he actually went out and sought people out to come together for the likings of this, or for the rights of this young African-American homeless male.
Yes.
Doesn't that discredit, like Reese has been saying, doesn't that discredit any, just even a tiny bit, a molecule?
Right, the racial overtones. You're absolutely
of the
right.
Racial, I mean, doesn't that count?
Well, actually, yes and no. See, we get into a gray area here. Because this is what I have said. And I have said that, and I have gone on record, and I have told Reese and everyone else who listened, that calling him a racist is no longer case when it comes to George Zimmerman.
But
the rest of it,
but your arguments
yes.
of racism have to do with the police department. But hold on. JC, make your point. Now, I'm actually going to debunk what it is that you said about the police department, because that was revealed today. But, JC, what was your point you wanted to bring up?
JC?
Oh, good. Since he's not around anymore.
Hold on.
Can I finish mine?
Wait.
Oh, there you go.
JC, are you there? What happened to JC?
I don't know. Maybe he got upset because we made him wait. Because we just couldn't shut up. And happy 420 to everyone out there.
Oh, please. Here's where what I wanted to bring up, and the part that everyone, JC, you there?
I don't think that's
no, he's not.
Where JC? Okay.
Oh.
Yep.
There, JC?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sorry.
Okay, no problem.
What I wanted to say was,
go ahead.
Given everything that you guys spoke about earlier, where we don't know what happened between when George had given him the police or the dispatcher where to meet him at.
Mm-hmm.
From there, and we don't know whether he followed him after that point or not. There's no proof that he followed him. And we don't know that we don't, and like you guys say, we don't know that Trayvon didn't come back and confront him.
Right.
Given that scenario, if Trayvon came back and confront him, then more than likely they had to have one of those long, outdrawn Peter Griffin chicken knockdown drag him out from the cartoon.
Right. But
one of those cutscenes.
He's fighting the
giant chicken.
Yes.
Yeah, right. Where they fought all over town, and based on where the actual shooting took place, and where the actual headbanging took place on the concrete.
Right.
Okay, JC,
yeah.
You said that you had looked at a map.
Yeah.
We talked about this a few days ago. You said that you had looked at a map. So based on the map that you looked at, or the
I don't pay attention to the arrows.
Probably just, the Google.
Just at the X's.
Right, but go on.
Okay. What?
No, he's talking about something.
No, he's saying that he's not paying attention to the arrows. He's paying attention to the actual spots. The X marks the spot.
Okay.
Where,
right.
So
based off of
where George Zimmerman's car was left when he got out of the car and pursued Trayvon Martin as he was running. When he got out of the car, based off of where his car was parked, then when he was probably right about at the mailboxes when the dispatcher told him they didn't need him to pursue him, to, you know,
right.
And Trayvon says, okay, he's going
to And he
stop.
Walks back.
Okay, wait a minute. He doesn't say that he walks back, and it appears that he says to the officer at the point that he stopped was, or to the dispatcher, there's mailboxes here. You know, I'm right where the mailboxes are. Those were not as exact.
Right, and he does say, well, can you just let him know where I'm going to be?
Okay,
right.
Yeah, so that, and that's what he says.
Yeah.
Okay, so where, what is the distance between the car, the mailboxes, and then the site of the death?
Okay.
The car is directly across the street from the mailboxes.
Right.
And the actual spot where the shooting took place is about maybe a good 70, 80 yards away.
You're absolutely right. It's about 70 yards away.
70 yards away from where he said he was going to be?
From the mailboxes.
Right. Right.
And in what direction is that? Back towards the car or in opposite direction?
Opposite direction. Going towards where his father's girlfriend lived.
Yes.
About a little more than halfway point.
Going towards his father's house.
How much time would it have taken George Zimmerman to get from the mailboxes to that point?
5 minutes.
Well, we don't know if he was running or if he was walking.
If he was walking.
Yeah.
Okay, let's say he was running, just for crap's sake. Let's say he was running.
3 minutes.
It would take him 3 minutes to run about 70 to 80 yards.
Yes.
How long was it before the next phone call to the police came in? That
there was no next phone call.
There was another phone call. A neighbor or a resident of this gated community called the police and said, reported that there were two men fighting outside.
Right,
and
okay.
And then you hear a gunshot as he's on the phone, okay?
You hear somebody screaming, help me.
Tell me, what were the times? Do you have that, JC? How long did that take?
I think I might do. Just give me 1 second.
Okay.
Let me make a point here to
you. You know what? Actually, no. Actually, I want to follow this because I think Mary is on to something here.
I mean, that's how I would investigate it. Like, if I was a cop, you know,
I
love
CSI. Right.
I mean, I'm sure they did.
Well, first and foremost, the thing is, it wasn't even investigated. That was another main point of this story. It wasn't even investigated at all.
But my point is,
Hold on. Obviously, they did do some investigating, or these pictures wouldn't have surfaced.
Well, for the media and for everybody else, for us, for any of us to be sitting around talking about this, if this information is available, we should bring it to the forefront because nobody's talked about it, and that can maybe help, you know, answer some questions that you probably wouldn't even ask because people are just looking at it like, oh, here's a white kid, he, you know, shot and killed this black kid. Here's a white man that shot and killed this black kid. It's a racist situation. He pursued him.
I still think, you know, when you talk about racism, I know that, you know, with the stigmata about it, all right, there's still, when you talk about racism, you usually think about black and white. But there are a lot of black people who don't like black people.
And
there's a lot of racism isn't just black and white.
Hispanic community.
Yeah, I know you're saying that racism is.
Well, wait. Actually, I'm even choosing the wrong word. I'm not talking about racism. I'm talking about prejudice.
Yes, I understand.
Trayvon was hunted down.
Like a rabid dog.
He was shot in the street. He was racially profiled.
All right, let me.
Well, check. once again, from what we've heard, wait a minute. Now that you played the little sound bite, but you still can infer that from George Zimmerman's own words. Okay? He didn't say, well, I don't know what he looks like. He says he looks black.
No, okay, wait a minute. Those were his own words, James.
Yes.
But he was given
multiple choice.
The dispatcher was gave him multiple choice.
And when he was given the multiple choice, he said not that he looks white or he looks, I don't know what he looks like, but he said
no,
he looks black. And
did he answer the question?
All he knew.
Stop! Everybody stop! I'm sorry, James. I gotta put you on hold. Now you're going off the deep end.
No.
Everybody's wrong here. Sorry. And I let everybody meander on and go in every other direction. I gotta stop everybody. Sorry to do it, but I gotta stop everybody, especially James on that last frickin' comment, which is insulting. And for some odd reason, you should know better. Okay? Trayvon was black. Okay? And stop making that this whole thing about how unfortunate it was for him to be black. Okay? Trayvon Martin was walking by back and forth, okay, giving the impression to George Zimmerman. Not that he was, and not that it was a fact, but to George Zimmerman, giving the impression to George Zimmerman that he was doing something nefarious. George Zimmerman called a non-emergency number, told the non-emergency dispatcher that he's had a lot of break-ins. There's this kid walking around. There's this person walking around. He believes that he is doing something nefarious. He's asked by the dispatcher, is he black, white, or Hispanic, because he needs a description to give to the police officer when he gets there so he knows what it is that he's looking for. George Zimmerman says he looks black.
Yeah, you must give a physical description. I mean, how else are you going to find somebody?
It's because that Trayvon is black. So, in essence, what you're saying, James, is that because Trayvon is black, that just because anybody who witnesses him doing something that they suspect is nefarious automatically makes it racist.
Only if the other person is
not
black.
Only if the other person is not black. Because then I would say, if it would have been a black neighborhood watch person who said that he saw somebody that looked like he was doing something nefarious, he had mentioned it, that you would have automatically assumed that he thought those things because it was a black person, and therefore he is either a race traitor, he doesn't trust his own race. The fact of the matter is that Trayvon is black and George Zimmerman is half white and half Latino. And if you're saying that George Zimmerman shouldn't have said something to the police department solely because Trayvon Martin was black, then that, my friends, is racist in and of itself. That he's only supposed to try to eradicate crime if it's of people of his own race.
That way he's not
viewed as a racist. Oh, he picked out somebody that's the opposite race of him. Racism. That means that he has to marginalize who he is as a neighborhood watch person, and only pick out people who he can pick out, that he is supposed to socially be able to pick out. Well, George Zimmerman, you're part white and you're part Peruvian. The only criminals you're allowed to identify to the police are part white and part Peruvians. And if you see a black person doing something nefarious, you're only doing it because of racism. And it's not because of George Zimmerman's alleged
suspected criminal.
Suspected. But it's not because of George Zimmerman's alleged racism. It's because of people who are racist within themselves, is that you're not supposed to pick out black people as criminals. Because if you say that a black person is a criminal, you're automatically racist. And it's bogus, my man. It's bogus. George Zimmerman has had break-ins in his neighborhood. The person that he saw walking on him, according to him.
According to his perception.
According to his perception, that he saw somebody that looked suspicious. And Trayvon Martin happened to be black. We don't know what Trayvon's actions were. We don't know that. We don't know what he was doing that would pique his interest. You are saying that because he was black, that was all George Zimmerman needed, and you have no proof of that. And that's been disproven because George Zimmerman has proved himself to be a non-racist. through his personal life in tutoring black people and the fact that he stood up for Sherman Ware. That completely discounts him from being racist. Think about what it is that you're saying.
And it's what the horrible...
No. I need to take a break. Okay? Because when we come back, I want to throw some other dirt in the game. And this is what truly the problem is. Because everybody's all over the place. And they're not getting what the facts are. When you hear what it is that I'm about to tell you that came out of the case today, in this bond hearing, when you hear about this, somebody explain to me, how George Zimmerman was racist. When you find, and pardon me, how the Sanford Police Department was racist. When you hear this news, when we come back, it's Reese on the Radio. Stay right where you are. Don't go anywhere. Reese on the Radio returns in a moment right here on blogtalkradio.com.
An Olympics hit by scandal and deficits. He rescued them. He turned around dozens of companies and became a business legend. A state losing jobs with huge deficits. Governor Mitt Romney turned it around, cutting spending instead of raising taxes. At every step, he's met extraordinary challenges. Mitt Romney, the energy and experience to turn around Washington.
I'm Mitt Romney, and I approve this message.
Hey guys, I'm Jordan Sparks.
I'm Chase Crawford.
Hey, what's up? It's Usher.
Hi, I'm Rachel Bilson.
I'm Hayden Christensen.
I'm Peyton Manning.
Hey, we're Fall Out Boy.
I'm Dude Archuleta.
I'm Corbin Bleu.
I'm Kristen Bell.
And we're the Jonas Brothers.
And I promise you, none of these people listen to my show. But here's some people who do.
Hey, Reese.
Hi, how you doing?
I don't think you're a buffoon.
Thank you, dear. George, you're on with Reese.
Hi there, Reese.
Hello, George.
Please let me do the talking today.
George, you're going to be brief.
I respect what you said because you know something, you're being honest.
Hey, I'm glad that you're bringing up what's most important, and that is the issues and where people stand and what they have for experience.
It's Reese on the Radio, weekday here on blogtalkradio.com.
Exciting things are happening at Burger King.
Welcome to Burger King.
What's in those new chicken snack wraps?
What's in the new chicken wrap? Mary?
Crispy chicken, fresh lettuce, three cheeses, fresh dressing, wrapped up in the tasty lava tortilla. Crispy chicken, wrapped up in
the new chicken snack wraps. Come and get it.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Reese on the Radio. And let me tell you something. Nothing makes my job more perfect than interacting with you, the listeners of the Reese on the Radio show. Eric, you're on with Reese.
Hey, first of all, I want to say that you are very refreshing, my friend.
Thank you, Eric.
I do think there's too much emphasis on the race card.
Sure.
I'm sick of people who want to be treated exactly like everybody else as long as we recognize that they're different.
Yes, that's it. Chris, you're on with Reese.
Yes, hi, Reese. I just had to rebuff that guy that called you and said your arguments were weak.
Sure.
He's basing his vote on something you said, and he's talking about
my arguments weak, right?
Yeah, what a hypocrite. Well, I hope he's still listening. Buddy, you're a hypocrite. You shouldn't even be allowed to vote.
Thank you, Chris. I appreciate it. Steve, you're on with Reese.
Hey, Reese, I've got to compliment you. You were wonderful handling that guy who is going to base his whole decision on something you said, which you handled it well. I think you just sealed the deal with the listeners, and you're doing a wonderful job. That's all I wanted to say.
Steve, thank you very, very much, and I appreciate that. It's Reese on the Radio right here, 8 to 10 p.m. weeknights on blogtalkradio.com.
Proven conservative leadership. Newt Gingrich. In uncertain times, we need a leader whose commitment to conservative values has been tested. Newt stood with Ronald Reagan. Newt stood up to Bill Clinton, and Newt was there for conservative values. But most importantly, Newt has always believed in the greatness of America, that America's best days are ahead. The choice. Newt Gingrich, the proven conservative leader. Winning our future is responsible for the content of this message.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Reese on the Radio, and you know you can get Reese on the Radio anytime you want by logging on to ReeseOnTheRadio.com.
That's right. ReeseOnTheRadio.com gives you all the latest news, all the latest stories that I find interesting. And you can also click on to www.ReeseOnTheRadio.com and listen to archives of my new show, which is on BlogTalkRadio.com. That's right. It's www.ReeseOnTheRadio.com. You can get all the latest news, all the latest events, and anything else happening in Reese's world. It's Reese on the Radio, and I'm back right here on BlogTalkRadio.com.
He defends our freedom, and his record shows it. Ron Paul. Answering our country's call, Ron Paul became a flight surgeon in the Air Force. As a doctor, Ron Paul delivered over 4,000 babies and is a leading defender of life. In Congress, Ron Paul never voted to raise taxes, never voted for an unbalanced budget, never voted to restrict gun rights or raise congressional pay. Protecting our God-given freedom, Ron Paul for president.
I'm Ron Paul, and I approve this message.
If you're not listening to Reese on the Radio on blogtalkradio.com, you've got no idea what you're missing. From the Daily Caller, Mr. Matthew Boyle. Matthew, thank you very much for joining us. I'm glad you took some time out for us.
Great to be here, Reese.
Who do we have on the line?
All right. This is Sean Quali, National Spokesman for Black Panther Party.
Sean Quali, thank you very much for contacting us and being on the show. For all the news and the people making news, make sure you check out Reese on the Radio on blogtalkradio.com, 8 to 10 p.m. right here on blogtalkradio.com.
Warning, the sounds you're about to hear can be devastating to your ear.
I love it, I love it, I love it, I-L-O-V-E.
You're listening to Reese on the Radio right here on blogtalkradio.com. It's Reese on the Radio. We're back. 8 minutes till the top of the hour. April the 20th, 420. I don't know what that means. April the 20th, 2012. Let me say something before we get to the top of the hour, and I'll let you guys go on, because I let you guys go on forever, and I'm sorry if I, you know, in the event that I appeared to be rude, I had to do it, because you guys are meandering all, I'm sorry, I had to do it, but you, I may have done it in the wrong way, but you guys are meandering all, and you're going in all these directions. I want to say something to you, and then
I'm going in one direction.
No. I want to play this audio for you. Here's the reason why. Because I don't care what anybody says or what it is that they think, the facts are the facts. Because when I found this out today, there was something that ran through my mind. So give me at least 2 minutes to say this, and I'll let you guys go on before we go on to the top of the hour. If not, I'll even delay the top of the hour to let you guys go on. So let me say this. It's very important. It had been reported mostly by people. We were under the impression that George Zimmerman was brought to the Sanford Police Precinct. He told his story, and then that's it. He was let go. That's the thing that everyone has been outraged about. They've been outraged about the fact that George Zimmerman shot Trayvon Martin, went to the police precinct, gave a statement, and they let him go. That was it. Over. Done. And George Zimmerman's allowed to go free. They just took his word, and he was gone.
Didn't even investigate it.
If you listen to Al Sharpton, if I must play it, Al Sharpton says that, you know, they didn't, you know, and even the lawyer, Crum, for the Trayvon Martin family, the only thing that we were upset about was that Sanford Police Department did nothing to investigate this case. But in today's hearing, that was clearly disputed. And here's why. Pay close attention. George Zimmerman apologizes in court. And listen to what the prosecutor asks, which totally disproves that George Zimmerman made his statement and went home and was never, ever bothered with again.
Well, we know
George
that
Michael
home.
Zimmerman, and you had advised me that you wanted to make a short statement. Is that correct?
I wanted to say I am sorry for the loss of your son. I did not know how old he was. I thought he was a little bit younger than I am, and I did not know if he was armed or not.
And I'm sorry, sir, you're not really addressing that to the court. You're doing it here to the victim's family. Is that correct?
They are here in the court, yes.
I understand, but I thought you were going to address Your Honor, Ms. Judge Lester, not. So that's really addressed to the family and where the media happens to be, correct, Mr. Zimmerman?
No, to the mother and the father.
Okay. And tell me, after you committed this crime and you spoke to the police, did you ever make that statement to the police, sir? That you were sorry for what you've done or they're lost?
No, sir.
You never stated that, did you?
I don't remember what I said. I believe I did say that.
You told that to the police?
In one of the statements, I said that I felt sorry for the family.
You did?
Yes, sir.
So that would be recorded because all those conversations were recorded, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And you're sure you said that?
I'm fairly certain.
Okay. And so which officer did you tell that to? I think you gave five statements, I believe, total.
Yes, sir. I'm sorry. All the names blend together.
Okay. And do you remember if it was a male or a female?
There were both males and females.
At the time you made that statement that you were sorry?
Yes, sir.
And let me make sure the record's clear. You stated exactly what to those detectives?
I don't remember exactly what, verbatim.
Okay. But you're saying you expressed that concern for the loss of Mr. Martin or that you had shot Mr. Martin, that you actually felt sorry for him?
I felt sorry that they lost their child, yes.
And so you told detectives that you wanted them to convey that to the parents?
I don't know if they were detectives or not.
Officers, I apologize.
I didn't know if they were going to convey it or not. I just made the statement.
Okay. And then you said that you called them up or you left a message for them to tell them that?
No, sir.
Why did you wait 50-something days to tell them, that is, the parents?
I don't understand the question, sir.
Why did you wait so long to tell Mr. Martin and the victim's mother, father and mother, why did you wait so long to tell them?
I was told not to communicate with them.
Okay. So you, even through your attorney, you didn't ask to do it right away? Your former attorney's right?
I did ask them to express that to them, and they said that they were going to.
But before you committed this crime on February 26th, you were arrested, you were questioned that day, right? February
26th. That evening. Into the,
yes,
27th.
Sir. And in the following morning,
mm-hmm.
Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
And in the following evening, too?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Would you be fair to say you were questioned about four or five times?
I remember giving three statements, yes, sir.
And isn't it true that in some of those statements, when you were confronted about your inconsistencies, you started saying, I don't remember?
Outside the scope of direct examination, I would object, Your Honor. I'll give him a little bit of leeway, not a whole lot, but a little bit here.
So we hear now that George Zimmerman has made several statements to the police. Several. The prosecutor says five times. George Zimmerman remembers three. So therefore, he had been in contact with the police, as far as George Zimmerman is concerned, three separate occasions.
Well, they didn't say it was on three separate
occasions. Yes, a statement is one occasion. You can't take, no. Never, ever, no. Let me make that clear. There's never, ever what's called three statements in one visit. Never. When you make a statement, it is one visit. When you make a statement, under the rules of Miranda, statements are made when you were brought in. Your statement is the statement you make in that one visit. When he suggests that there were five statements, that means he's met with the police department five times. Look it up anywhere. There was never, ever a breakdown of statements. In other words, they don't come in, have one statement from you, then walk out and then come in and do another statement. No, they, according to the prosecutor, five times. George Zimmerman contends that it was only three. But it was reported to everywhere that he only met with the police department that one night and they let him go home. And what we also learned in that is that the shooting happened before 7:30. He walks into the Sanford Police Department and half an hour to an hour later, which would make it somewhere around 8:30. George Zimmerman was in police custody until the early morning hours of the 27th. So that would dispute all media claims that he made a statement and was allowed to go home. So the police department kept him there for hours. At best, more than 4 to 6. So this old bull crap about how George Zimmerman was just allowed to make a statement and go is now disputed. Now disputed. Because they didn't reveal it to the media. When we come back, I'll explain to you why it was never reported to the media.
Come on.
All the humanity, all the...
Perry had a little man that he went to his soul. And everywhere that Perry went, the man was sure to go.
Turn on, tune in, and drop out.
Yeah, I'm super cool.
I never once said, na-da-da.
I think everyone wants to know where we came from and how the universe began.
You know what I'm saying?
I have sinned against you.
It's Reese on the radio, top of the hour, 1 minute after the hour on this April 20th, 2012. And we're extensively talking about the Trayvon Martin case. So, does anybody want to know why? Anybody want to know why the police department...
Oh, you've got to be kidding me, Reese.
Anybody want to know why the police department never revealed that he returned to the police department for separate occasions?
Why? Why do you believe?
Oh, I know why.
Oh, you do?
Oh, yeah. Do? Very easy.
You know what, Bruce?
I wasn't on the answer, though.
It's very simple. The Sanford Police Department knew who George Zimmerman was.
And if they took him, of course, because he's the son of a judge.
No. George Zimmerman tried to get...
Oh, of course not. No, they knew who he was. Why? Because he's called a number of times?
No. Because George Zimmerman tried to have police officers reprimanded for the Sanford Ware case. They knew who George Zimmerman was. That's the reason why they brought him in. That's the reason why they kept bringing him in. That's because they knew that he had already been vilified. How had he already been vilified? March 10th, it had already been reported by Matt Gutman of ABC News that George Zimmerman had killed Trayvon Martin.
This was after he had already gone home the first night.
But wait.
First and foremost, let's not even go through that. What I want you to answer, all right, is because I don't know what you heard, but from the soundbite I heard, the man couldn't even tell you what he said or not. He said, I don't know, I believe, I don't know. And then the prosecutor kept trying to lead him down.
Verbatim.
James,
what he said.
James, he said, I can't tell you verbatim.
Now, he did
I can't tell you verbatim.
Now,
but he also said that I believe I told him, I don't know if I did, but I believe
That's about the apology, James. Okay. That's not about the evidence.
I'm not even talking about the apology. I told the cops I apologized or whatever. He couldn't even get that straight.
So, but that, James, that has nothing to do with the evidence, though. That has nothing to do with the evidence.
But you're the one who brought it up. The one who brought it up.
Do you want me to answer it? Let me answer it. The reason why I brought it up was it was reported in the news, and it was reported by Al Sharpton, Jesse Jackson, the New Black Panther Party, and everybody else who made this, their case, has said that George Zimmerman was just allowed to go home without question. And that has been disproven. Hasn't that been disproven?
No, it's not. Because even though they even if they called him or they called him afterwards, he was home when they called him.
They brought him back.
He wasn't in custody. He was allowed to go home, Reese. He was.
James, again, I'll bring it back to the question. It was reported that George Zimmerman made his statement when he was brought into the police and allowed to go home without question. And they never questioned him again. And it turns out that that's not true.
No, that's not what you said. Now you're changing the freaking story.
No, James, that's exactly what I said. It was reported
You said he was whether he was allowed to go home or whether he was called again, and he said he was called.
James,
he said he was called there. He talked to them.
He was called back to the station, James. He was.
But he called back to the station.
James.
Back to the station.
That would dispute that he never was questioned again. That was the whole argument.
No. It wasn't even that. He was allowed to go home.
I'm not disputing whether or not he was allowed to go home.
Why did they ask those questions when they had him in the first place?
He was allowed to go home.
James, he went back. Even if he went back, he was still allowed to go home.
James, could you stop for a second and listen? Listen to what I'm saying to you.
Oh, my God.
James, can you listen?
Yes.
It was reported that George Zimmerman was brought to the Sanford Police Department and then allowed to go home based on his word. And that's why they were outraged at the Sanford Police Department, was that he was just allowed to go home. But the truth of the matter is that the Sanford Police Department did follow up and bring him back in to question him two more times. So what I'm saying is, James, it flies.
Again,
James,
he was allowed to go home. You can't come back,
James,
if you weren't allowed to go.
Not disputing that he was allowed to go home, James. You're splitting hairs. The question was whether or not.
Ain't that what you just said?
No.
Oh, come on, Reese.
James, it's not what I said. It's not what I said. And you're not hearing what I said. I said again, it was reported. According to Al Sharpton, apparently not.
So let me try to.
Well, no. I don't care about Al Sharpton. I don't care about the media. All right?
James.
I don't care. All right? About that. All right?
James.
Because them.
Stop for 1 minute, okay? Just stop. I understand that you don't understand the way Reese is explaining it, okay? I'm going to help you try to see the point. So give me a minute. Promise me that you will relax for a minute. Take a break.
Take a breath.
Okay.
I'm going to take a breath. Musa.
Count to 10. What
needles,
Reese is saying?
Needles and pins. A happy man is a man that grooms.
Okay, great. What Reese is saying is that what his point is, in the media, the entire time that we have all been watching this case unfold, in the media, not at one time has the media reported that George Zimmerman was questioned at the police department on several occasions. It was perpetuated that he was only brought in on the night that the incident took place and questioned that night. When he was let go in the wee hours of the morning, we don't know exactly what time, that was the only time.
Who said it was in the wee hours of the morning?
James, let me finish.
That was the testimony today, James.
Okay.
Yeah, that was the testimony.
If you're missing my point, don't start. Let me finish.
Let's hear.
Because you're going off on another angle. Okay? So that Reese is trying to make everybody understand or see why was it not reported in the media or talked about at all that George Zimmerman was taken back to, even though he was let go home the first time, he then was questioned again at the station by detectives, whoever, police officers, let go again, then goes back for the third time from home or from wherever he was, because we know he wasn't home because he was hiding, because the new Black Panther was
in short, James, okay, in short, we know.
Is that the media never reported that, James. The media made it sound like George Zimmerman was arrested or taken into custody the evening that the incident took place, released the next morning, at least after midnight. We don't know what time, but after midnight on the 27th.
And he was.
And he was, but the media made it appear to be that he was let go, and then he went off into hiding, and no one could find him, and no one knew where he was, although the media knew the entire time that he had been questioned on two other occasions that he physically went from wherever he was supposedly hiding to the station to be questioned on two more occasions. All we're trying to say is, why was the original media they had this information? Why was it perpetuated that he questioned?
All right, you're breaking up here.
First statement, let him go. That's it. You're in. You can go home. You're out of here, buddy.
You're absolutely right. That's the bottom
line. How much more can you explain it?
Exactly. Let's take a call. 347-308-8701. Mike, you're on with Reese on WRKO.
Reese.
I can't believe I said WRKO.
Recant that statement right
now.
Oh,
you're on with Reese on the radio on Blog Talk Radio.
Did you just say WRKO?
It's just stuck in my head.
Wow.
Hey, Reese.
Hey, Mike, how are you?
Hey, what your caller James is missing is that George Zimmerman was never arrested because it's illegal in the state of Florida to arrest somebody with a legitimate self-defense claim.
Right.
That's why he went home that night.
Right.
He wasn't actually arrested, placed in custody until just recently.
Well, at that juncture, I would say it was an alleged self-defense claim.
Yeah, well, it was a believable self-defense claim.
Right.
It's still alleged.
Well, yeah, because he's the only other witness there outside
right.
of that, the guy that saw him getting pounded.
And when the state's attorney took the statement from the police and saw what he had, he said this was not an arrestable case. If they had arrested him then, they would have been in violation of state law.
Right, but understood. Because at one point they did request that they charge him with, I think it was manslaughter too,
yes,
for some reason that charge didn't come about.
And the state's attorney said, no, we don't have a case.
Right,
and to be
right.
fair, if the Reverends Al and Jesse had left this alone, it's a legitimate self-defense case. This man shouldn't be in jail right now.
Well, I don't know about that.
Yeah, I can't say that I necessarily agree with you. You know, I'm not going to be a judge or a jury. You weren't there that night. I wasn't there that night. No one was there that evening, that unfortunate evening for both, you know, both parties. Very unfortunate for everyone involved and for the rest of us as well. But
you weren't there, so
you can't say that it was legitimately self-defense. We'll let a jury decide on that and, you know,
the evidence that the police and the state's attorney got at the scene shows that it was a legitimate self-defense claim. You don't get much more legitimate than a bruised and bleeding victim and two eyewitnesses.
Right, and that's again.
That is
something, Mike, and you're very right about that. That is.
I have a question.
Hold on, one second, JC. That's the point that I believe that a lot of people are missing. You have two eyewitnesses who clearly state that George Zimmerman is on the ground and Trayvon is on top of him. It's never been disputed. No one's ever discounted that it happened that way. I think the argument here, Mike, and correct me if I'm wrong, I think the argument here for the prosecution is, and as far as the second-degree murder charge is, is that they want to split hairs, and I'm not using that in a pejorative, but they want to split hairs on who started the fight, where it ended up, where George Zimmerman was on the ground. And
well, yeah, but according to Florida state law, it doesn't matter, and I'll tell you why.
Go ahead.
Then, as soon as Trayvon Martin had George Zimmerman on the ground, when he was supine on his back, no matter how that happened, once Trayvon Martin climbed on top of him and denied him the ability to escape and started pounding him, Trayvon Martin morphed into being the aggressor in the eyes of the law.
Well, okay, now I'm glad you mentioned that, because here's a very, very valid point. Now, I heard Abrams, what's his first name, Don Abrams?
Yeah.
Is that the lead
MSNBC, Dan Abrams?
Yeah, MSNBC, yeah. And ABC, yeah, he's on ABC often. Don Abrams made a statement today. He said, when he was on Good Morning America today, he said that what would really be the turn of events here that would turn this on its ear for George Zimmerman is that if it can be proven that George Zimmerman was the aggressor, that stand your ground no longer applies. Is there any truth to that?
Absolutely not. Dan Abrams is totally wrong there.
It is Dan Abrams, right.
Yeah, George Zimmerman, no matter what led up to this, was under no obligation to have his head beaten in. He could have been a hood-wearing Klansman spewing racial epithets, and he could have thrown the first punch. As soon as he lost the ability to be a threat, which is when he's supine on the ground, Trayvon Martin has no right to get on top of him and dole out punishment. There was a case a few years ago, I don't know if you heard about it, it was in Oklahoma, I think, a pharmacy was being robbed by two criminals with guns. You remember this case?
Yes.
And the pharmacist drew down, he shot Thug A in the store, and Thug B ran off. Well, pharmacist chased Thug B out the store and couldn't catch him, so he came back to find Thug A laying on the ground. And he looks at him and shoots him again. Well, the pharmacist is in prison now, because you can't punish someone with violence who's no longer a threat. And when someone is laying flat on their back, you can't climb on top and punch them in the head. That's denying that person's ability to escape, and they don't have to take that.
So you're saying that the breakdown of this is going to be, and George Zimmerman's strongest defense in this case is going to be, even if he were the aggressor, even if he did follow Trayvon, even if he did get into a fight that he started, once Trayvon has him on the ground and he's subdued him, Trayvon, not that he's the aggressor, but he has control of the situation, and he could just hold the guy down and leave it at that until the cops arrive, but instead he is continuously harming George Zimmerman. George Zimmerman is within his right, based on the Stand Your Ground laws, to say, I believe that this kid is going to kill me, and I can shoot.
Yeah, but it's not Stand Your Ground. That's where people are getting it twisted. It's simple self-defense.
It's just simple self-defense.
It's simple self-defense. Those are two totally separate concepts.
Okay, now this, listen, the person I'm about to bring in, Mike, is a lot different than Mr. Shabazz from last night. This is our Kool-Aid man, James Montgomery. He's
okay.
Going to have some questions. I'm going to drag. You live in Florida. You live
sure.
Close to the Tampa area. So I'm going to let you guys go at it. And
okay.
I'm going to referee. So, James, sure. Be prepared. James, what questions do you have for
Well, I had a question Mike? First.
Well, go ahead.
Get one in real
then, I'll bring James
sure.
in.
No, Mike.
Yeah.
Now, it's already well known that Zimmerman followed. That's already documented evidence. Now, obviously, one would have to assume that Zimmerman followed to the point where there was an altercation between the two.
No. If you look at the timeline of the phone calls, and I sent Reese a tweet.
Yes, you did.
To Waggis. Did you get that, Reese?
I know the first call of 911 to the non-emergency operator went out at 7:09.
Right. The question is, I don't want to interrupt you, but what about the missing Waggis is calling it 2 minutes and 30 seconds? And we're dealing with a young athletic man, correct?
Two young athletic men.
Trayvon Martin was an 18-year-old, 6'3" football player type, right?
Right.
So are we supposed to believe that if he was, as his girlfriend Dee Dee said, he was scared that this 5'9", 170-pound guy was following him, are we supposed to believe that in 2 minutes and 30 seconds, Trayvon Martin couldn't have run to his dad's girlfriend's townhome and called the police?
Okay.
The timeline indicates that he came back.
Well,
you think he left and you think he came back?
Call 911 for that fact.
Hold on, so you believe that he left and came back?
I believe that he hung out or he went back to the townhome or he hid somewhere and talked to his girlfriend and saw Zimmerman turn around, excuse me, and came back to confront him. That's what the timeline seems to indicate.
Let's bring in James. Let's have a little 10-minute sparring match.
Okay, hold on, because I'm going to give James his 10 minutes. And based on what you said,
mm-hmm.
based on what you said, now, let me make sure I got my thoughts straight. Based on what you said and where the actual shooting took place,
mm-hmm.
and from where Zimmerman was told not to pursue,
that's
a pretty good distance?
Well, if we're going to split hairs, he was said
not splitting hairs. I mean, okay. Unless Trayvon came back to the car and attacked him and dragged him 70 yards to where he got beat.
No, I mean,
how do you explain that?
I think that he did walk down a little bit, but the time frame is the issue. It's not the distance, it's the time.
Mm-hmm.
Where was Trayvon for that 2 minutes and 30 seconds from when Zimmerman says, and he did say on the call, I don't know where this guy is. You know, when they
right.
asked him, you know, where's
That's
your
right.
home? He says, I don't know where this guy is.
That's exactly
so,
what he said.
I don't know where this guy is. If Zimmerman can't see Martin, then Martin probably can't see Zimmerman. So there's no threat. So he had eluded George Zimmerman if he was following him. And the 2 minutes, 30 seconds,
if that was the case, then the actual altercation should have taken place probably at the car, correct? Where
no.
he was supposed to be?
No,
not necessarily. This kid
he
would
was,
have been
he
hiding
was, he
between
was asked buildings. By the proper authorities to stay to not pursue, and basically to stay at the car and meet him at the mailboxes, which is where the car was parked.
Well, maybe he was taking a different route. Who knows? But the issue is the time frame.
Well, the thing is, there aren't too many routes to take.
Why didn't?
JC, I got to stop you there because in that case, now we're going into a deeper speculation because we don't know where it is that George Zimmerman knows that area better than Trayvon does because he lives there.
Mm-hmm.
So where George Zimmerman decides to walk, George Zimmerman's got a better advantage than anybody, especially Trayvon Martin because Trayvon Martin is a visitor.
Well, but there's really only one way back to where he was coming from.
Not necessarily true.
Unless he's going to cut through people's condos inside.
This he could do, but of course, if it's George Zimmerman, he could cut through certain areas, but because he's a night watchman,
I'm saying he'd have to walk through the buildings like Superman.
Well, I understand that. Let's bring James in. Let's give him an opportunity to jump in.
Okay.
And Derek the Bounty Hunter's on the line, too. Hold on one second. Let's bring in James, and let's give him an opportunity to spar with Mike from Florida. James, be respectful.
Hello, Mike. Yes, I'm gonna try to stay calm here.
Mike, answer questions and whatever. Don't yell, don't scream.
Yes, sir. I'll try to stay calm here. But I'm going to call into question Mr. Mike's own statements. And yours as well. Because your feeling about it is predicated on the fact, a fact that has not been put into evidence. It's still predicated on Trayvon being the aggressor.
Yeah.
Which, from the phone call, from the 911 phone tapes,
mm-hmm.
is not the case. And as you said, well, And I actually thought the same thing. Well, maybe he hid, or maybe he did something, you know, or maybe he hid. But again, this is not an aggressive move. It's not, sir.
Perhaps he was hiding to come back and speak at that George River like George said.
Right. But, again, but that still says that George Zimmerman was following him or trying to find him. I don't know where he is. I don't know
and
where he is.
Is there anything illegal about that?
Well, once again, from George Zimmerman's own words, he ran away.
And
he couldn't find anyone.
Right.
He couldn't find him. Okay.
And what's your point? James, do you realize the person who said, we don't need you to follow him, was not a police officer?
Sir, I'm not even talking about that. I do understand that, and yes, I do understand that as a dispatcher, not an actual police officer.
Well,
yes,
actually,
sir.
So George Zimmerman is within his rights to walk around his neighborhood if he sees fit, correct?
Well, once again, you are still predicating on the fact that it was George Zimmerman who was supposed to be there. No one has ever said that Trayvon was not supposed to be there. His father.
Now he's allowed to be there. Allowed to be there. You know what he's not allowed to do?
So
he's not allowed to tackle people and punch them in the face.
Sir, please, sir, may I finish?
Sure.
Okay. Again, you're still predicating the fact or a manufactured fact that Trayvon wasn't there either legally, illegally, or whatever. Okay?
No. I don't know where you're getting that.
Yes, sir.
You're pulling things out of thin air, sir.
Then you cannot say, sir, you cannot say that either one of them were supposed to be in the area.
What? Are you high?
Yeah, hold on, James.
Are you high?
Let him speak.
No, sir, I'm not high at all. You can't say that Trayvon wasn't supposed to be in the area.
And I didn't. Nobody has said he didn't belong. He wasn't supposed to be there. The issue is that he looked suspicious to the man who was self-appointed watchman.
Again,
it's his job to watch.
And again. Once again, who's to say that George Zimmerman was right in and of himself? He can't say
James,
who
nobody
was
there.
Be in the area or not.
James, no one is disputing that.
Because he's a neighborhood watch.
He's neighborhood
that's
watch.
His response
okay.
to that is responsibility.
I truly cannot believe that it was the first time that Trayvon Martin had ever been in the neighborhood.
Well, even if he was, James, if he had been there 10 times, George Zimmerman says that he sees Trayvon Martin meandering around suspiciously, according to George Zimmerman. James, you're arguing something that we have not disputed.
No, I'm not, sir.
Let me finish. You're arguing something that we have not disputed. We've not disputed that Trayvon Martin had a right to be there. That's one. We've not disputed that Trayvon Martin was innocently targeted as somebody that he wasn't. We're not disputing that. But according to George Zimmerman's recollection of what happened,
none of this is germane to the issue
exactly.
at all. Why are you going off on this tangent?
The reason
I'll
why
tell you what matters, James. The only thing that's germane to this issue, no matter what, is that two eyewitnesses saw Trayvon Martin beating the hell out of George Zimmerman. That's it. All the rest of this stuff is just bumping gums and hot air. The only thing that matters is people saw this man getting beaten. And he has injuries to prove he was getting beaten. That's what makes it a self-defense.
All right, well, James, is that important to this case to you? Is it important?
Yes, it is important to that case.
In what capacity is it important to you, James?
Why is it important? Because in George Zimmerman's own words, Trayvon Martin was running away from him.
Why didn't he run away only
to turn around and attack unless you're being followed?
What?
Or unless you're a, just pardon my language, a badass thug from a tough town in Miami.
A badass thug. But there is no evidence that he was a badass thug.
Anything that happened prior to that night with regards to his character doesn't matter because his character is not what was shot.
No. The character does lend credence to whether he would come back and start a fight or not.
On the same token, I'm glad you kind of said that. Now, if Trayvon's being followed,
mm-hmm.
does he have to have a gun himself? In order to defend himself on his own stand your ground?
But if this guy is following him. Stand your ground does not mean, I don't know where this guy is, and then a 2 minute, 30 second time gap and coming back to confront somebody. That's not stand your ground.
If he feels as though he's being followed, he could be 8 feet tall and the guy is small. He doesn't know what the guy has. I mean, how the guy did have a gun on him. And as a result, he was dead.
It's not the same issue. You know, stand your ground means that if somebody gets in your face, you don't have to run away. It doesn't mean that if you've already gotten away from somebody, that you get to come back. And the timeline is showing that.
You have no evidence to support that he went back.
The timeline between when I don't know where this guy is and the fight is 2 minutes, 30 seconds to cover 70 yards.
And 70 yards.
I could crawl 70 yards in 2 minutes, 30 seconds. And I'm a short white guy.
Okay, but on the same token, if he had gone back to the vehicle, there wouldn't be a 70-yard distance for him to go.
But you know what? Hold on. Let me stop you guys for a second. Hold on. I'm going to put everybody on hold real quick. Let me stop somebody. Okay, everybody's on hold. You're not on. Let me make something very, very clear. Mike only makes a valid point for one reason, and this is very, very key. It is germane. If the distance between Trayvon Martin when he saw George Zimmerman and the home of his father's fiance. Okay, in the home of his father's fiance, in 2 minutes and 30 seconds, which is that distance, and Trayvon runs, okay, Trayvon Martin has more than enough time to run to his father's home. There is no reason for the two of them to be confronted unless Trayvon Martin runs, gets away from George Zimmerman, feels as though he's safe, starts walking back towards his father's fiance's home, and then sees George Zimmerman again. Now, we don't know whether or not that happened. George Zimmerman says, I lost him. Trayvon Martin runs. He's lost him. All of a sudden, Trayvon Martin feels as though, okay, I lost him, or whatever. He doesn't see him around. He starts walking back. They meet each other again, and they say something to one another, and then a confrontation happens. Let me bring in Derek the Bounty Hunter because I know he's on the line, and I want to bring him in before we go to break because I know he's been listening, and Derek is, of course, down in Florida. He's in Orlando, and I know he's got an opinion. Derek, you've been listening, so what's your position on this so far?
Well, my situation is this. You know, I'm like, if you're following me, you know, I mean, you know, I'm a man here. You know, this man is following me. At some point, I'm going to look, man, I'm not going to take that anymore. I'm not doing anything wrong. Here goes some crazy man following me. For all I know, he's some type of sexual predator or something like that.
Right, right. We agree
he
there.
He has no uniform on. He doesn't have neighborhood watch shirt on or anything like that. I just see some, you know what I'm saying, crazy looking, you know, bald Spanish guy chasing me. What's going on here? You know, you guys are sitting over here saying Trayvon had no right to stand his ground. He just sees some guy following him. You know, come on. And you guys know me. I'm going to turn around. I'm going to be like, hey, you know, enough is enough of this crap, you know. I got to stand my ground. I'm a man.
Okay, but Derek, with that being said, and I'll bring Mike in, and you can challenge him on the statement you just made. Think about it in this regard. Trayvon Martin's girlfriend tells him to run. She says, her affidavit or her testimony so far has been, there's some guy watching Trayvon. She tells Trayvon, run. So Trayvon runs. Now, instinctually...
I think Derek dropped out, but go ahead, continue on.
No, Derek's there.
No, he's not.
Oh, okay. I didn't see that. Instinctually, and we're waiting for Derek to come back. I didn't realize we lost him. Okay, there he is. Derek, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Instinctually, I'm saying that if his girlfriend tells him to run, why wouldn't Trayvon's first place to run? Because you use the word sexual predator, somebody who's nefarious, if he's seen George Zimmerman following him. Trayvon doesn't know anybody in the neighborhood. Why run anywhere aimlessly and not run to a place that would be considered a safe house? Because that would be his father's fiance's home. Because that's where he knows to go.
Look, you know what? It's a scary situation. You're walking and all of a sudden somebody just starts following you. Somebody, I mean, come on. Dude, that's a scary situation to be in.
I understand it's a scary situation, but the instinctual thing to do, the instinctive thing to do, I should say.
We're talking about a 17-year-old kid.
Oh, come on. No.
No, we're talking about a kid. And who's to say that he didn't know anybody else there? We don't know how long he's been visiting there.
This is true, but he didn't run anywhere else. He doesn't run home.
And why would he have to? I mean, why does he have to? And when he has a right to be there in a complex
area?
I'll
tell you why he has to. Because he is in fear, gentlemen, as you've just displayed here. You are you guys are pretty much basing your opinion on Trayvon Martin's fear. He is fearful that someone is watching him and someone has something someone is trying to do him harm. The first place I would run is go to someone who can protect me, and that is my father. And my father is complex. Why wouldn't that be the case?
No, Reese, me and I were just having a conversation about last year this time. I went to this place called Chico Sub, right? And I bought a Chico sandwich. Okay, Chico's on about 96 now, right? So the sub made me sick, okay? Now, I got back to my apartment. And I'm in the bathroom. I mean, I'm just about to throw up. I mean, I'm just dying. You know, I didn't have to throw up. My stomach's killing me, right? Now, I didn't know my roommate was in his room, right? But he decides to go behind the door. And as he comes, you know, as I come out the door, he goes, rah! Now, you know me. I'm not going to scream. What's the first thing I do? I punched him in the nose. He ends up getting a bloody nose and everything. I'm like, dude, do not scare me. Now, Trayvon could be just like me. You know, dude, you scared me, man. I'm going to attack. All right? I'm not going to just power into a corner. That's just not me. You know what I'm saying?
But wait a minute. Now you're only proving the point that Mike and I are making, that if you struck first...
Dude, the man jumps from behind the door. Rawr, pow! All right? I mean, dude, man.
let's bring Mike from Florida back in.
People have different reactions to fear now.
Mike.
We know you like violence.
Yeah, Mike.
Yeah.
Do you hear, Derek's in the Orlando area.
Mm-hmm.
Do you get what it is that Derek is trying to say, that Trayvon...
Had a right to stand his own ground.
This is not what stand your ground means. I think they chose poor words to name this law. Stand your ground does not mean I got out of trouble and then I sought a dangerous situation. And that's what it looks like happened here. You don't have the right to, if you're afraid of George Zimmerman, to elude him, which, again, it's obvious he eluded him, because that's what Zimmerman says, I don't know where this guy is, and says, I'm going, and he's going back to his car. Trayvon Martin, and you've eluded this scary Peruvian white guy, you don't get to turn around and come back and get some because he insulted you or made you feel threatened. That's not Mike.
There's no evidence that he turned around. You keep saying he turned around, that he wanted to go get some,
I'm telling you, the timeline indicates that he had to have turned around.
Yeah, the timeline clearly says that, because if he had two minutes, 30 seconds, he had 2 minutes and 30 seconds, man. I mean, you hear the, I mean, you don't follow football very much, JC, but you ever hear what we call the 40 in football? He's like, you do a 40 in four seconds or whatever it is.
Right. I understand that. I do understand that.
That's 40 yards in 4 seconds.
I can run the 40 in 8, and I'm 5'7 and 41.
Okay, so you can run 40 yards in 8 seconds. What's considered in football, you can do 40 yards in 4 seconds. Trayvon Martin is a 6'3", 17-year-old football player. I'm pretty sure he can run a 4.40 in less than 4 seconds, if not 4 seconds. If he can, 2 minutes and 30 seconds gives him, from the distance he is to his father's fiance's house, he can go there 78 times.
Okay, again, Norris, again. Why does he have to run home? And it's just like Mike said earlier. Just like Mike said earlier, if he's a tough kid from a tough area on a tough side of town,
JC, you're proving my point. The point is obvious. You're saying, why does he have to run home? We're making that argument.
Why wouldn't you run home? Listen, if I'm being followed by some,
predator.
Some predator, or I don't know who this guy is, and I'm somewhere where I know that I can get to a safe place. I'm gonna run to that safe place. But now, hold on 1 second, because Mike, it's almost like I want to address something that the way that you said something a few minutes ago. You said, you referred to George Zimmerman as this, you said it in a way of like this scary white Peruvian guy, as if he couldn't be scary because
he's
white and Peruvian. Wait a minute. Let me tell you why I say that. Because Trayvon Martin is in that neighborhood doing whatever it is that he's doing. George Zimmerman is perceiving whatever Trayvon is doing in his own personal way. Has nothing to do with anyone else. He's perceiving his actions in a certain way for whatever reason.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Trayvon Martin decides at this point, like, maybe this guy is watching me, he's looking at me, I'm going to run. He starts running. George Zimmerman then exits his vehicle and starts chasing after him. So, therefore, at this point in time, this white Peruvian guy, is scaring the hell out of me because this Joker is chasing after me. Obviously, I would be scared. I don't care whether you're black, white,
let me
blue,
stop
or green.
You.
Wait, whoa.
Mike, before you say anything, let me stop you. That's not accurate, Mary, unfortunately. Let me tell you, because no, it's not. It's not accurate. Because George Zimmerman says, he's staring at me. He's got his hands in his waist. He's walking towards me. George Zimmerman says he's running, and then George Zimmerman gets out of the car.
No.
You mischaracterized what happened by saying that George Zimmerman got out and chased him, and then he runs,
which didn't
happen.
If I said that, I didn't mean to say that. I know that didn't happen. I know how it happened.
Okay.
Trayvon Martin decides at this point this guy is watching me, or I see him watching me.
And then he runs.
And then George Zimmerman gets out of the car and chases after him. I'm sure that Trayvon was probably looking behind him,
giving substance to George Zimmerman's assertions that this kid is doing something nefarious.
His assertions and his assumptions, this kid is dead.
And let's not forget.
hold on. Go ahead. Go ahead. Go ahead, Mike, real quick. But no, you're
okay. Let's not forget that George Zimmerman was on the phone
when
he first spotted Trayvon Martin. Now, who's to say that Trayvon Martin didn't look at this guy, and I think he drove an Explorer, you know, which is really not kind of a gang member type car if we're thinking George Zimmerman is a scary guy. Who's to say that he didn't look at this guy and think, oh, crap, this guy's calling the cops on me.
Scary guy, Mike.
You know, and this kid was already in trouble, you know, and maybe the last thing he wanted was for the police to show up.
Right.
And that would be my assumption, is that this guy is on the phone calling the cops.
But this is exactly your – okay, listen.
That's the problem.
Listen, that is the problem. Just be – okay, George Zimmerman saw Trayvon Martin doing whatever it was that he saw him doing with his hand in his waistband. He was, you know – maybe he was acting funny, according to George Zimmerman. He was acting weird, is what George Zimmerman said. That was George Zimmerman's perception of Trayvon Martin's actions. We don't know if Trayvon Martin's actions were that he was walking a certain way.
Or accurate, right?
Or, you know, we don't know what that was because we weren't there. Now, at the same time, Trayvon Martin has probably already noticed that this guy in this Ford Explorer, which, you know, gangsters drive anything. that Trayvon
Martin.
You
come
to
Florida? Gangsters don't drive Explorers in Florida, hon.
I've been to Florida before, Mike.
Gangsters drive boxes and bubbles with 22s down here. No self-respecting Chi drives an Explorer.
Mike, I've been to Florida. Okay. I've been to Tampa.
He'd be a busted-ass G if he drove an Explorer down here.
Okay, Mike, I was only saying that being facetious to a statement that you made. None of that is even relevant at this point. Okay, my point
is... And how about that for my street knowledge with the boxes and bubbles, huh?
I'm loving that.
Yeah, cue me in. What the hell that is? Foxes and bubbles?
So, okay.
A newer Caprice, and a box is like an older Caprice.
Right, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Go on,
oh, my
Mary.
God. Oh, for the
Mary,
Lord
you're
Jesus. Okay.
Hey, I'm down.
Now,
well, you started
now,
talking
because,
cars. You can't get into three men talking
down,
cars.
Yeah, we're all down, Mike. Trayvon has now realized that George Zimmerman is watching him or looking at him or whatever. So now Trayvon has his own personal perception of how he is viewing what George Zimmerman's actions are. Maybe Trayvon feels like George Zimmerman is being nefarious or something of that nature.
In a gated community?
What do you mean?
Hold on. Trayvon might not know that whether George belongs there or not.
The homeboys cruise in the gated community all the time. I mean, come on now.
That's a valid point.
You know what,
Mike?
No.
He's in a good neighborhood, and let's not forget that Trayvon had an opportunity. Hold on, let me get something in here now. Hold on.
Let you speak.
Trayvon did approach George Zimmerman, right? I mean, that's on the call. Why not walk up and say, hey, man, my name's Trayvon. You know, I'm visiting my dad here. Instead of, are you following me?
In today's day and age, Mike, would you walk
You don't do that when you're in a hood.
Oh,
you live in a hood, you don't do that.
It's not the hood. It's a gated community full of townhomes with a lake.
You know what, Mike? It doesn't matter whether it's the hood or a gated community or whatever. Crime does not discriminate, my man. It's everywhere. It's within white people, black people, Latino people.
Oh, yeah.
It's everywhere.
Well, I'm sorry, guys. I you know what? Hey, Mike, I'm with you on this one, man. I'm sorry.
Of course you are.
Hey, you would be. You would be.
You are. You are with him.
Hello? Hello? Hello?
Hold on. Let Derek come chime in.
Can I talk? Okay, first of all, because I'm the only person that Mike, what do you do for a profession?
Say again?
What do you do for a profession?
Oh, well, gosh, I do a couple of things. I bounce in a bar. I bartend, and I'm a personal trainer.
Okay, because right now, as we're talking, okay, I'm armed security guard right now, okay? I do armed security guard in an apartment complex, and I do armed security in, you know, in a club, okay? Now, here we go. First of all, you're saying that you can only do a drive-by in 22s, that's a hell of a getaway car. Okay? I mean, come on. Right there, you're being stereotypical. I mean, let's
no,
be real.
You are being stereotypical.
That's just like me sitting over here saying, okay, the gun I'm going to shoot up the club with is going to be a Glock. No, it's not. Let me tell you something. My shoot-up gun is going to be a high point. Why? Because I can throw that one away in a lick and not think about it, okay? Because that's a $99 pistol. I'm not going to shoot up. I'm not going to do the drive-by with the $600 pistol. That's an investment. I'm just telling you, just, you know,
second of all,
you know, I'm sitting over here now, like I said, now, security here, okay? And I'm security in the neighborhood, okay? Now we have a guy that comes into the apartment complex every now and then, and he stands in the stairwell and he jacks himself off. We call him the West Side Whacker, okay? Now
okay.
When the West Side Whacker, comes into the apartment complex, I call the police. I do not follow the West Side Whacker, okay? Now George Zimmerman, right, who is neighborhood watch, he doesn't even have an armed security license. He has no right to. You see, you guys are sitting over here saying he has the right to chase. Oh, no,
yeah,
you do
does,
not.
Actually.
Derek, I'm telling you right now, I cannot chase you. But the reason why you cannot chase him is because you're armed security and you have a protocol to follow within the company you work for. It's a different thing here, Derek. It's a different protocol. You were trying to...
I think what Derek is saying, though, even as a citizen, besides whether he was on patrol, armed or not, working, he still doesn't have the right as a citizen to chase after somebody.
No, wrong. Derek, that's not what Derek's saying. Derek is attributing what he does as an armed security guard who works for a company and the protocol that they lay out as a company. He's attributing two separate things in trying to make a union. It cannot work that way. And Derek, I had to put you on hold because you're wrong here. Because you're talking about what you do as an armed security guard. What we are talking about is, in the case of George Zimmerman is only following a protocol of protecting his neighborhood. Mike, am I wrong here?
You're absolutely right. I mean, he has every right to follow some guy in his neighborhood if he wants to. That's not stalking. That's not against the law.
Hold on. I want to let Derek back in. Derek, you heard what it is that I said. You have a protocol to follow because you work for a private company. Is that or not true? Is that true or not? Derek?
He might have gotten a phone call.
Okay.
Well, we lost him. If anyone has a right to follow me, and I don't like the idea that they're following me, I don't have a right to confront them.
Well, you can confront them.
Yeah,
you can confront them. But do you punch them in the nose, JC?
If I feel threatened, I don't have a right to protect myself.
I'll
give you this, JC. You can even punch them in the nose if you feel threatened. What you can't do. It's climb on top of them and start raining down fists and bashing their head.
Hold on. Okay, now
that's
when you're in a fight, drag them out. You both are rolling.
Yeah.
How is it then determined who's the aggressor then?
They just happen
to see this guy on top.
He shot him so close
that he had a ring of gunpowder around the bullet hole.
JC.
Well, yeah.
It's who has the advantage in the fight. The person who has the advantage. Listen. If the person has the advantage in the fight.
If I get into a fight in Florida, I have to really think this fight through while I'm pounding this guy.
Before I end up being. We're not saying that. What I'm saying is that if you are in the middle of a fight, and you decide, okay, I've got the better of the guy. I've got him down. I'm holding him down. And I've gone through this at the bars in New York. I got the guy down. I am in a position of power. If I decide to use that position of power to pummel the guy, and then he pulls out a gun to shoot me, then I'm in the wrong because I've already got him down. He is in a submissive position. And that's where we're making the argument here, is that
yeah,
if Trayvon is got George Zimmerman on the ground, he is in a sub, George Zimmerman, for that matter, is in a submissive position, and I can hold him down until the cops arrive and
but
then sort it out.
Who's to say that Trayvon Martin was not doing that and George Zimmerman got away, his hand got away, and pulled out his gun and shot Trayvon?
The bashes in the back of his head.
The broken nose and the gashes in the back
of his head. That goes with a fight.
He wasn't
that goes along with the fight.
Was not unconscious. He was not unconscious. He was conscious at the time that he pulled his pistol out and let go that firearm into Trayvon's chest.
Wait.
If you're going to make that argument, let's make the argument on both sides.
Is he supposed to be beaten unconscious? He doesn't know what this kid is going to continue to do to him.
Unconscious, but if he gets, his
hand free. At some point, he got free.
If he gets his hand free to pull a pistol, he can get his hand free to try to get this kid off of him.
No, not necessarily at all. Did you ever watch UFC? Anybody here watch UFC besides me?
I don't watch it very much.
I'm not familiar with it.
Have you ever seen a fight? As soon as a fighter is on his back and someone's on top of him, they call a fight. Because that's a deadly situation.
No, they don't call it unless he taps.
If someone's on his back taking blows to the face, the referee calls the fight. The guy doesn't have
He gives the guy time to see if he can redeem himself.
Yeah,
or get
like
out of the
three,
situation.
It's like three or four hits.
Or when you see the guy look like he's about to lose consciousness.
Because
then
people die
that
way.
Let's let Derek in for the last word before we go. Go ahead, D.
Well, like I said, all I'm saying is, Trayvon had the right to defend himself. I knew if somebody was chasing me, I don't know. Even though I'm black, I'm not fast, okay? I'm not the fastest black guy. Yes, my 40-yard dash is going to be in the 5-second range, okay? So I'm going to turn around and stand
my ground.
Mine's going to
be in a 5-hour.
Wow.
Stand my ground, bro. All right?
This is not what stand your ground means.
Let's put it like this. If I was Jesus, I wasn't dying on the cross, okay? They're going to stab me with like that. I'm going out.
Thank you, Derek. I'm putting you on hold now. Guys, I appreciate everybody's word on this, and I'm putting everybody on a hold. Let me just say this last word. This is going to be the George Zimmerman case. It is going to be, as I said at the opening of the show, it is
OJ
2. It's OJ 2.0. It is always going to incite people. The reason why we cover it is because of that, the ramifications. Everyone feels some sort of personal sort of association with this story. I don't know whether or not it's about Trayvon Martin being 17. I don't know whether or not it has to do with the fact that he was unarmed. I don't know whether or not the fact that it was racial. I know there are people out there who feel that on all levels.
I think it's collective.
You're absolutely right. It's collective. But I will be honest with each and every one of you, and Mary can't stop pointing it out to me, that I am siding with George Zimmerman here. But let me tell you why. Because you mentioned that, Mary, is because I know what it's like to be falsely accused of a crime that you did not commit.
Okay, but you do know what it's like to be charged of a crime that you did not commit. But we don't know. You're doing what the media, what you're saying the media shouldn't be doing. You're playing judge and jury. You can't at this point. You're siding with George Zimmerman already.
Only based on the evidence.
Okay, but based on the evidence that has been brought to the forefront, I'm sure that there's more evidence. There's going to have to be more concrete evidence, in my opinion. And this is for the jury to decide. So I understand your point. It's from the evidence that has come forth so far. But you can't side with him. You just have to watch and see how it goes.
Yeah, probably because I know that I'm right here.
I mean, I don't know what's going to happen. All that I know is that I hope justice is served for everyone involved.
Well, that might be fair. But everyone, please enjoy your weekend. Mike, of course, thank you as always for calling in and checking us out. I always appreciate that. For Derek the Brownie Hunter, James the Kool-Aid Man, JC the Producer, and Mary Mary, why you bugging? I appreciate everyone being a part of it. We will see you on Monday, and we'll find out what happens. It's Reese on the Radio, and we love you.
Have a great day.